I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. What were they thinking? VW has admitted that it installed software, a defeat device, in its 11 million so-called clean diesel engine cars designed to cheat on emissions testing. The EPA has ordered the company to recall the 500,000 vehicles sold in the U.S. that do not meet federal emissions standards. The Justice Department is pursuing criminal charges. The CEO of VW has resigned, saying he accepted responsibility, but, quote, "I am not aware of any wrongdoing on my part." The reputation and value of the car company has taken a big hit, and consumers who thought they had bought a greener vehicle are furious. Today, what does the scandal say about VW, about clean diesel technology, about emissions testing, and about the auto industry? Enough for an hour's conversation. And joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is John Paul McDuffie. He's a professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also the director of the Program on Vehicle and Mobility Innovation at Wharton. And John Paul McDuffie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. And joining us by telephone is Dan Becker. He directs the Safe Climate Campaign. That's a Washington, D.C.-based environmental advocacy group, fights auto pollution and global warming. Dan Becker, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I have to say, and John Paul, we were talking before going on the air, and I was just saying, you know, I am shocked. Mm-hmm. And I'm not someone who is easily shocked. Are you shocked about what VW did?
Yes, because it's so blatant, and it affected so many vehicles for so many years. They obviously thought they could get away with it. I don't know why they thought that.
Are you shocked, Dan?
I'm shocked more at the lies than at the fact that they cheated, because so many other auto companies and VW itself have been caught cheating in a similar way before. But yes, they did think they could get away with it, and the government, not just the U.S. government, but other governments, are going to have to make sure that companies don't feel they can get away with it again.
And we'll talk about that. And to you, John, I'm just curious about the sort of history, I guess, of cheating or trying to get around federal emission standards, certainly here in the U.S. So this is not the first time either VW or an auto company has tried to do that?
Yeah, it goes all the way back to right after the Clean Air Act was you know, signed into law, early 70s. I think Volkswagen was one of the first offenders in the early 70s, but it wasn't, you know, just Europeans. The Ford was caught in that time frame too. There was a big case against heavy commercial trucks in the late 90s for actually exactly this same thing, a software change which made the trucks cheat on the emissions test. So, yes, we have a lot of examples over the history.
Dan, can you explain to our listeners how this device worked, how it was able to cheat on these emissions testing?
Well, in this case, in the old days, what they did was they had simple mechanical devices that turned off the emission system. One of them was so simple that it engaged the emissions controls when the hood was lifted, but not when it was down and therefore being driven. What VW did was very clever. They came up with a bunch of computer code, because a car is now basically a rolling series of computers, that instructed the vehicle to engage the emission system only when the conditions looked as if they were consistent with the test being conducted. So temperature, humidity of an enclosed space, steering wheel not being turned, certain speeds of the engine. Because first of all, the tests that allow the vehicle to be put on the road are dynamometer tests, and then the tests that people mostly know about are the ones that where they bring a vehicle in to be tested before they re-register their car. So this was basically the computer telling the car to turn on the emission system, but only when it was being tested.
I mean, is that a lot of complicated technology or code in order to have this device installed, Dan?
I gather it is. I'm not a computer expert. I'm just a lawyer. But my understanding is that it was a very sophisticated cheat mechanism. And that goes to how much of the company and how many employees must have been involved in making sure that this was done this way. Because remember, the law is there not just to catch cheaters, but to make sure that the air is cleaner so that people can breathe better. The pollutants that come out of diesel vehicles at a higher rate than gasoline vehicles are the soot and smog that exacerbate lung disease and cause childhood and exacerbate childhood asthma. So the government regulates these pollutants to protect people. And a company that comes up with a sophisticated system to turn off their emissions control is doing something very deliberate, and I think that may be part of why this has really hit a nerve with the American people, maybe even more so than the GM ignition switch, which seemed to be incompetence as opposed to willful misconduct.
I mean, this was done, obviously, deliberate. John, we're also talking about something, nitrogen oxide. I guess it's something specific to diesel gas, diesel-powered engines?
Yeah, that's the contaminant that diesel emits in much higher quantity than internal combustion engines with gasoline, as Dan said. And, you know, Europe has always regulated NOx much more loosely than the U.S., and Europe in a regulatory sense has really favored diesel as a fuel. They've subsidized, there's lower taxes on it, et cetera. But I think Europe's love affair with the diesel is at least tarnishing even before this because it does emit fewer carbon gases, so it's better for global warming. It has higher fuel efficiency, but the deal was we can clean it was what the car companies were saying, and it's not so clear that it can be cleaned as much as promised. So, and the standards for all emissions, but particularly for diesel, have gotten tougher in Europe. The Euro 6, which came in 2014, really had a much tougher standard for NOx. So it's possible that the Volkswagen diesels were legal, even if they were deceiving the test, that they were legal at an earlier stage in terms of the Europe regulations. They were still fooling the test, which made their gas mileage look great. But maybe at some point with the tougher standards, it suddenly crossed the line to not meeting that standard.
Well, I'm thinking about those people that bought a clean diesel Volkswagen thinking that they were doing something good for the environment. Have they been actually hurting the environment because they've been driving these cars? Can
sure.
we say that?
Yeah. I mean, and that's where the feeling of betrayal will come. I mean, people have purchased their Volkswagen diesels for different reasons, but the ones who bought it thinking they were doing a really good thing for the environment are the ones feeling the most betrayed right now.
And Dan, are these – we're talking about Volkswagen so far, but are these cars more polluting than a gas-powered engine? Do you know? That's to you, Dan. We seem to have lost him. All right, we will try to get him back on the line. I mean, as you sort of compare, I guess, the pollution that comes out of a gas-powered versus diesel-powered, are they vastly different?
Well, it's these different forms of emission that have different impacts, right? So obviously we've had a lot of concern about carbon emissions because of the impact over the longer term on right. global warming. And that's been the focus of the U.S. regulations as well as the European regulations. So I think it's the, as Dan was saying, the impact on airborne particulates, on respiratory diseases, on asthma, where the diesel penalty is greater. And I think that's part of why Europe has toughened up in that realm too.
What's so interesting about this is that the discovery wasn't by the EPA directly. It was really by this group of what appeared to be kind of pro-diesel scientists who did some testing on some of these cars, I guess real-world, real-driving testing, and found that the emission standards just – or the emission evaluations just did not hold up.
Yeah. Well, there's a nonprofit, an NGO in Europe. I forget the exact name. It's ICCT. And they noticed that in Europe there was a growing deviation between the test result claims on emissions and what their own road tests showed. Not on the order of 40 times or 4,000%, but, you know, 30, 40%. So they were curious about the U.S. They put out a call for proposal, and a West Virginia University lab won the bid to test the diesels in the U.S., and they're the ones who discovered it. Now, they had the cooperation of the California Air Regulatory Board, which let them use their test facilities. And so it was really CARB plus the West Virginia group that pressed Volkswagen initially. And, you know, Volkswagen stonewalled for
a year. And they did for a year.
Yeah, and they, in fact, agreed to do a voluntary recall to the 500,000 diesels in the U.S. And but what the West Virginia researchers noticed is that the fix didn't fix it. And so they had, I think, 10, 12 meetings with VW, and it was only when they went into the software and they were able to say to VW, we see your code, which cheats the emissions test, that Volkswagen admitted it.
Interesting. And Dan, I think we have you back for whatever reason. You were lost to us for just a couple of minutes. Does this raise questions about the kinds of emission testing that either happens in the United States or also in Europe? But let's focus on the United States. Does it raise questions about just how stringent and effective it is?
It does. One of the things that people don't understand is that the auto companies, under the testing protocol, test their own vehicles, and then they submit the data to the EPA and California Resources Board, the governments basically spot check 15% to 20% of vehicles, but mostly it's self-testing, and the companies have proven that they really aren't trustworthy to test themselves. So what the government is going to need to do is bring the testing in-house. That may be a combination of independent laboratories that the government supervises and governments setting up testing facilities themselves. And because the auto companies have shown that they can't be trusted and have caused this crisis, they're going to have to be assessed fees in order to pay mm-hmm. for this new advanced testing. But I think we've learned now that the government's going to have to take this over. And there are two kinds of testing. There's testing for the pollutants like nitrogen oxides and soot that VW was caught with here. There's also testing for fuel efficiency, the mileage MPG rules. And both of those rely much too much on the auto industry to do its own testing. And the government will need to take this over.
We're almost up in a break here. But, Dan, are you saying testing every single car or testing more than 15% to 20% of them?
They'll have to test every model. Right now, they don't even test every model. And in some cases, on the fuel efficiency side, the companies can choose an efficient model and have it represent a whole group of less efficient models to show that they're in compliance with the efficiency rules. That's got to end.
That's got to end. We're going to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Dan Becker. He directs the Safe Climate Campaign. It's an organization based in Washington, D.C. An environmental advocacy group has been fighting auto pollution and global warming. And we are talking about the scandal involving VW, the fact that it has admitted that it installed some software, a defeat device, on its so-called clean diesel engine cars designed to cheat on emissions testing. Also with us is John Paul McDuffie. He's a professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. He also directs the program on vehicle and mobility innovation at Wharton. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Any questions or comments, do call us, do join the conversation. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about the news of last week, VW revealing, admitting that it had installed software in its diesel-powered cars that allow them to cheat on emissions tests. We're talking with John Paul McDuffie and Dan Becker, also talking with you at 1-888-477-9499 to join the conversation. Let me play a clip. This is Michael Horn. He's the president and CEO of Volkswagen Group of America, making a comment last week.
Our company was dishonest with the EPA and the California Air Resources Board and with all of you. And in my German words, we have totally screwed up. We must fix those cars, the cars. We prevent this from ever happening again, and we have to make things right with the government, the public, our customers, our employees, and also, very important, our dealers. And this kind of behavior, I can tell you out of my heart, is completely inconsistent with our core values.
John, how much of a problem does VW have with its reputation, at least as it stands today?
Well, it's huge, and it is heightened by not only the deliberate deception, but by how much their marketing has upheld, you know, the nobility of their clean diesel program as a contributor to the environment. So to they counted on that to help them boost their market share in the U.S., but it the contrast between the two is must be really painful now.
And very glaring, I must
very
say.
Very glaring.
Let me pick up on Dan was talking about it's time to really take a look at these emission standards, the role of the EPA or others to evaluate what car companies are saying about their cars. What are your thoughts or your suggestions about how to deal with this?
Well, one of the things EPA has been saying is that in addition to the tests of models in the lab, they need to be randomly selecting cars off the road and doing road tests because if they had been doing that, they would have caught this much sooner.
And road tests are – that's real-world driving.
Right. I mean, which is how the West Virginia engineers first spotted this. They simply flew to California, rented a couple of cars at the airport and drove all the up and down the West Coast until they spotted this discrepancy. You know, I think Europe is an interesting case where each country has had different regulatory standards and there are vendors who compete to get the automaker's business, often with a promise to, you know, help make the test go as well for them as possible. So the EU is considering, I think, quite seriously, a centralization of how it regulates this and how it does testing. And I imagine what the EPA does and what the EU does will be not deliberately linked, but they'll be watching each other, and the public, I think, will be ready to support this.
I mean, what you're really both talking about is some sort of independent outside group that's going to do these evaluations on these cars.
That's right.
Dan, even with what Volkswagen had done with its technology and in trying to boost mileage and also reduce the kind of destructive impact on the environment or certainly on health, did they get the kind of boost in mileage that they were looking for? I mean, has that been a selling point for these cars?
Well, diesel is inherently dirty, but it's also inherently about 25% more efficient than gasoline cars similarly equipped. The emissions controls are designed to bring the diesel up to gasoline levels of, I shouldn't say cleanliness, but less dirtiness. There's a very slight diminution in acceleration and fuel economy by using the emissions control system, but not so much that most drivers would notice it. And if you just think logically for a minute, you're using energy to move a several thousand pound hunk of metal on a road and run air conditioning and other power accessories. The emission system doesn't really use very much power, and so it shouldn't reduce the fuel economy very much. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that VW has done over the years is they've glorified German engineering. And, you know, they claimed that they were the paragon of engineering, and now we learn that they were unable to engineer their cars to meet their consumers' needs without poisoning them, too. And that really isn't an acceptable way of going. And the tape that you played of
Michael Horn.
Cheese from VW USA, you know, that's the kind of attitude that is great to hear now. But for 6 years, they continued to deliberately cheat the system. And now they're coming out and piously apologizing and saying it's not part of their culture. Well, I think we need to look at the culture of the auto industry, which has a very long and very vociferous hostility to environmental protections. They fought the Clean Air Act. They fought the fuel economy improvements, the 54.5 mile per gallon standards. They fought every major environmental protection, and they fought it vociferously. And then once it's adopted, they use every loophole they can find and try to resist doing more than the law requires at a bare minimum. And now it turns out they don't even do that. Mm. So we will need to figure out how to deal with this culture of hostility to environmental protections, because that's part of what the car companies do. And as John Paul said earlier, every major car company has been caught cheating in a way similar to VW. So it's not just one company.
I mean, John, should we be suspicious of, you know, when you look at the sticker and it tells you how many miles per gallon you're supposed to get on a car, no matter what kind of car, should we be suspicious of those numbers?
Well, the sticker numbers haven't matched driving reality for more or less anyone, and that's somewhat acknowledged if you read the fine print that the tests are under certain controlled conditions, et cetera. You know, the broader issue of trust between consumers and governments and society generally in automakers at a time when there's a tremendous amount of technological change and other kinds of change. I mean, you know, the automobile over 100-year history, the dominant design, as people who study technology say, was settled by the late 20s. A car kind of looked like it does now, you know, so lots of technological advance, but still within that design. But electric vehicles, self-driving vehicles, all these things that are on the horizon represent the first fundamental changes since that dominant design. And you know, and if we're not trusting the automakers who are trying to steer us into these new technologies, that's complicated. Mm-hmm. And if the regulators have a more fundamental level of distrust, that changes a lot of things.
Dana, now, do you want to get...
That's a fascinating point. I think it's really important to recognize that the auto is basically the same thing that it was about 100 years ago. But if you look at almost any other product, it's vastly different. You remember that, you know, music used to come from a cranked gramophone with nippers sitting in front of the bell. Now it's an iPod or other MP3 or other device. The telephone used to be something where you cranked it up and you said, "Hey, Mabel, get me Gladys." And now it's advanced cell phones. So the auto industry needs to change the way they look at the future. And yes, Tesla and some other companies, maybe even Google and Apple, will be producing future cars. But we're going to have these car companies for a while, and they need to get kicked in the tailpipe to head in a better direction than they're going.
Are you talking about jetpacks, Dan?
I wish.
As
John said, electric vehicles, electric drive, cleaner vehicles that don't poison the people who are driving them and their children and their neighbors.
Does this, and I was reading that diesel cars about 3% of sales last year in the United States, John. I mean, do you think this is a death knell for so-called clean diesel? Or, I mean, I guess if there's a fix and you can still maintain sort of other parts of the car that the people like, perhaps it's not the death knell. But what do you think today?
Yeah, I mean, diesel has struggled in the U.S. market. Some of the early models that U.S. companies introduced in the 70s had terrible problems with polluting and with odor, and the reputation is bad. And a lot of Volkswagen's marketing was trying to overcome that. You know, I think some people feel that in the U.S., Volkswagen might be wise to abandon diesel and push more quickly into hybrids and electric vehicles, partly as a kind of penance or a way to kind of redeem their image. They're not the only ones selling diesels in the U.S. The luxury German makers do as well, but obviously in quite a bit smaller volumes. And, you know, Volkswagen appears to have invested less in hybrid and electric technology than BMW and Daimler, partly because they had such a strong belief in the superiority of diesel. I remember conversations with various German engineers when the Prius came out to say, you know, it's such an inelegant design because you have actually two different drivetrain trains, diesel is so much better. And so I think that sort of belief has not only driven the current crisis, but a lot of the investment decisions of Volkswagen. BMW seems to have made a bigger commitment to electric, and they might step that up now for similar reasons.
And that's John Paul McDuffie again, professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, directs the program on vehicle and mobility innovation at Wharton. Dan Becker joining us by telephone. And he's the director of the Safe Climate Campaign. It's an environmental advocacy group based in Washington, D.C., fighting auto pollution and global warming. And, yes, we are talking about the scandal at VW. I read this morning that Audi says, Audi owned by VW, says that 2.1 million cars affected by diesel emission scandal. A Facebook comment from Jay says, my beloved Audi was ensnared in this big lie, too. It's slightly devastating. Let me get Alan from, looks like King of Prussia, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Alan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
That is not my correct name, as I had worked for the corporation a couple of separate times, and I've been around the product since 1972.
Okay.
I do agree with most of what has been said, but there's another thing that nobody's talking about, is the manufacturers who manufacture these control units were complicit with this. They had to know that the software was being changed because they build these control units and program them. And I also don't believe Winterkorn didn't know this, because the way the Germans work, based on my decades of experience with them, is everybody knows what's going on, more especially the people at the top. And I'm very disappointed, but I am not surprised.
Well, I do appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Winterkorn, known, John, as a kind of hands-on CEO, an engineer by training. And the question is, you know, who knew it? When did they know it? Who was covering up for what?
Yeah.
We don't know the answer yet, I guess.
We don't know the answer. I heard in the news today that there is a criminal investigation of Winterkorn in Germany. Apparently in German law, companies can't be found culpable, so it would be charges against individuals there. You know, he also largely set the context of Volkswagen wanting to be the biggest automaker in the world, and that push for volume, where growing sales in the U.S. was extremely important, may have been a big factor here as well. I wanted to pick up on another thing the caller said, which
sure.
was about the suppliers that make the ECUs, the electronic control units. So Bosch is a giant German supplier, one of the biggest in the world, one of the most technically sophisticated, and they hold a lot of the key patents on diesels. They've already said, we wrote the software that controls the ECU, and we told Volkswagen, don't use it for deceiving emissions tests, essentially. And Volkswagen made all those decisions on their own. But we're going to find that the issue of who wrote the software is going to be divided between Bosch, which wrote the basic software, and VW would have had the ability to customize it. So it is it's not going to be easy to find, you know, a kind of signature of the group of 20 engineers who wrote the fatal code.
Dan, you want to weigh in on this, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Sure. I think it's also important to look beyond just VW and Bosch. Since most of the other companies have been caught cheating previously, the U.S. government and others will need to figure out whether anyone else is currently engaged in this kind of activity, and will have to both pursue a criminal investigation of VW, but also anybody else whom they find is engaged in the same pernicious practices.
Well, and as you said, Dan, you're a lawyer. It looks like there are going to be a number of lawsuits, class action lawsuits, a lot of disgruntled and frankly pretty angry VW consumers who say this is what, fraud, Dan?
Well, it's certainly fraud. The company lied to them and told them they were getting something they weren't, and there are probably a lot of people who bought a clean diesel because they wanted it to be clean, and otherwise they could have bought something else.
Sure.
And what happens? So first of all, with a recall, it's up to the consumer to bring their vehicle in. VW is going to have to make sure that every consumer does that, and whether that's because they offer them a bounty of, say, $500 to bring your vehicle in and have it repaired for free, or whether, if that doesn't work, they then say, look, the warranty is going to be voided. You really need to do this. All of the vehicles need to be brought in to be repaired. And then there are going to be some consumers who say, look, I didn't want a vehicle that was flawed, and you need to buy it back. And frankly, you need to buy it back at the price that I paid for it. So there are going to be all kinds of suits, as you say, that will pursue VW. And the company is going to have to come clean, both with the consumers and with the governments. And that's going to be expensive. They've put aside $7.3 billion equivalent in euros to deal with this. It turns out that that's almost exactly what it would cost for them to buy back all of the U.S. Vehicles that they lied about.
And that's
at full initial price.
Oh, that's interesting. That's 500,000 vehicles here in the U.S. Is there a technological fix, John, at this point? Do we know?
Well, I mean, at one level, it would seem that they could simply, when an owner brought a car back, they could flash the software, they could update the software and tell it to use the legal mode right. All the time. That will presumably impact performance negatively. It'll be shown up some in less peppiness, less acceleration, less miles per gallon, but of course, legal emissions. It's hard for me to know how great that performance decrement will be, how much a given consumer would notice it. One big problem with recalls is that a lot of consumers don't do it for any number of reasons. And if you already just look at various comments of VW owners, some are saying, I love my VW, I'm going to, I'm happy with it. They presumably aren't so worried about the dirty emissions. So what can be done in that case? Well, some states are already saying, we won't re-register your car if you have not gotten this fixed. So you've got the months until your annual renewal comes to ignore this, but then we're gonna get it.
An email from Janine says, I used to be proud to drive my VW diesel. Now I'm embarrassed. Also, somehow I feel guilty, like I was somehow complicit in this. Dan, it seems there's a lot of buyer's remorse here.
Well, there's buyer's remorse, and that's VW's problem. Janine didn't do anything wrong. She bought in good faith, expecting that the vehicle she was getting was indeed a clean diesel. And yes, I'm sure she's the kind of person who will bring the vehicle back to be repaired. One of the hints that EPA raised in their press conference on Friday was that the repair may be more complicated than just fixing the software. And I think someday we will find out what was the real reason for VW creating this cheat. One possible explanation that would also explain why EPA is saying that it may be more complicated than just fixing the software is that it may be that VW wasn't confident that the emission system would hold up in on-road use over the 100,000 miles that they have to warranty it. And so that perhaps, and I'm speculating here, that's one of the reasons that not only did they go to this cheat rather than just produce vehicles. But,
you know what, Dan, I got to – only because we're forced to take a little break here, but hold on to that thought, and we will be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking about the scandal at Volkswagen, admitting last week it had installed something like software, I should say, in 11 million diesel-powered cars, allowed them to cheat on emissions tests. Talking with us, Dan Becker, director of the Safe Climate Campaign, John Paul McDuffie, the director of the Program on Vehicle and Mobility Innovation at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. I do want to play an ad that probably is not running anymore. This is one of a series of VW ads for the Passat featuring three sisters debunking old wives' tales about diesel.
How do you like my new car? Isn't diesel dirty?
Oh, say it's beautiful, for Christ's sake.
I think it's beautiful, but aren't diesels dirty?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, that used to be dirty. This is 2015.
No. Listen to me, Terry. Diesel in Latin means dirty.
I'll prove it to you.
You're going to ruin your scarf. Oh, look what she's doing.
See how clean it is?
It's not dirty, but you still have a dirty mind.
I do not.
Yes, you do.
Those ads used to be funny, but not so funny anymore. Dan Becker, I had to jump in on you because we were up on our break here. Do you want to finish your thought?
Just the final thought is that it may be necessary for VW not just to fix the software, but also to retrofit and upgrade their pollution control systems if they're not up to snuff.
What about dealers? In fact, our engineer Kevin just whispered in my ear saying, where does this leave dealers for Volkswagen? I'm looking at you, John.
Yeah, well, I mean, they sell a lot of gasoline-powered vehicles in much higher quantity than diesel. They were hoping that diesel would be their growth area in the U.S., and it has been over the last few years. So, but they had some product launches this fall that they were really, excited about, and that was one of the threats that finally got Volkswagen's attention. EPA said, we won't let you put those on sale unless you tell us what's going on, and that's what precipitated this. So I'm sure that they're very unhappy, And, of course, the reputational cloud hovers over them, and presumably they didn't know about this.
And for someone that wants to get rid of this car, let's say they're saying, look, I thought I was buying a different kind of car. In terms of the resale value for some of these Volkswagens, I mean, they're cooked, are they not?
Yeah. And until it's clear what Volkswagen's going to do, that uncertainty will hover over the used car market.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. We have a lot of email comments as well. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, talking about Volkswagen revealing last week it had installed software in its diesel-powered cars, allowing them to cheat on emissions testing. Let me get Steve from Bryn Mawr to join us. And, Steve, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I was wondering, a lot of the new clean diesel engines require DEF, diesel exhaust fluid. Does that affect the Volkswagen diesel engines? Or the other engines. I have a Mercedes Sprinter that has a diesel engine, as well as we have buses as well that require DEF.
Sure. DEF, yeah. I'm looking at you, John.
Yeah. Well, so one of the ways that's been developed to treat the diesel gases before it goes out the tailpipe is in fact what the caller describes, and it means a separate container that you put a fluid in which contains urea, and most of the higher end diesels have that. Volkswagen wanted to claim that in its cheapest, most affordable diesel cars that it wasn't necessary. That they had made technical advances to not make it necessary. The part of what's true with this is you have to refill that as well as your gas tank, not nearly as often. By letting the engine run dirtier, as the Volkswagen scam did, it also meant that in their higher-end models that had this separate, you know, receptacle, they didn't have to refill it as often. So, again, it was another sweetener, I guess, for the owners to, you know, pep and high gas mileage, and you think it's clean and you don't have to do this other task.
We have an email from Craig. I'm going to give this to you, Dan, saying VW diesels have been labeled dirty for their emissions impact, but isn't there still some net benefit to the environment since these vehicles use less fuel than the average passenger vehicle? There's an environmental impact from drilling and refining fuels, which the average gasoline-powered engine uses in greater quantity. Can that argument be made, Dan?
It can be made, but it doesn't hold up for very long. As I said earlier, diesels are about 25% more efficient than gasoline cars similarly equipped. But in these cases, these vehicles were emitting up to 40 times the nitrogen oxide or smog-forming pollutants than the law allows. Mm-hmm. So 25% improvement in carbon dioxide, but a 40 times increase in nitrogen oxide and smog. It doesn't add up to an environmental benefit, but a big environmental decrement. So if these vehicles are fixed, you go back to the situation where you've got a somewhat more efficient vehicle, and that's a good thing. But we got to make sure we're not poisoning kids in order to eke out a little bit better fuel economy.
Let me see what Andy says from Wayne, Pennsylvania. And, Andy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I've owned a couple of light diesel trucks for the past 25 years, and one of the things I've seen, because this is the 07 emissions laws, I think, that Volkswagen's having trouble with. Over the years, they've done most of their emissions improvements with injection pressure and injection timing, and it's also benefited them in allowing better fuel economy and actually more power. But the latest set of emissions that have come out in 07, I mean, I know from Chrysler and Ford, they have a lot of problem with the exhaust gas recirculator. Some people refer to it as EGR.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering if that's why Volkswagen has done what they've done, because basically there's a lot of soot buildup, specifically in the air intake and turbochargers on most of these engines that cause a lot of, you know, performance problems, fuel economy, and sometimes even render the vehicles undrivable. And I wonder if what I've read in talking to people is that the improvements that were made in 94, 98, 04 really had great benefits. Now it's like I equate it to, like, if you want to juice a lemon and or an orange to make orange juice, and you leave 5% of the juice left in the orange and say, you know what, it's not worth the extra 2 hours because I think they'd get that last 5% out. Whereas, you know, if you notice it, you know.
Well, you know what, Andy, let me just jump in here because I think I know what you're saying, and you've had a couple of light, you've owned a couple of light diesel trucks, and I guess wondering whether, as the, I guess the emission standards, I'm looking at you, John, have gotten stricter over the years. He talked about 07. You were talking about 2014. So it seems like over the years, emission standards have gotten more stringent.
Yeah. The 2014 reference was to Europe. But yes, I mean, there's been three things going on that have affected diesel. I'm not a deep expert in the technology, but in the U.S., the fuel, the way that the diesel fuel has been refined has had a tougher standard in terms of, so the fuel has gotten cleaner.
Right.
The technology has gotten better, but the regulations have gotten tougher. So you've got sort of an intersection of these three things. Part of what gave clean diesel even a hope of being big in the U.S. again were the fuel changes. And then the other were the technical improvements that the manufacturers claimed would allow them to meet the emission standards. And that's where I think all the uncertainty lies now.
Dan, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I think as to Andy's question, we're going to need a full investigation by the government to figure out what are the parameters of the problem and where they lead. But as to why these standards keep getting tougher, it's because the air isn't clean enough for people to breathe safely.
Let me just read a bunch of emails here. Email from William. When the emissions equipment in these cars are properly turned on, does the fuel mileage go down? I know people currently getting 40-plus miles per gallon with the emissions equipment turned off in their VW vehicles. Less fuel use is better for the environment. And we did, Craig, an email from Paul. Three questions. Will this affect the price of used VW gasoline cars? Will it lower the cost of used VW diesels, assuming a fix comes out? What is the stock symbol for VW? Is it now a buy? I'm not sure we can answer that particular question. Email from Kathy. Is this a problem in institutional VW1, or could a few people in the organization make this kind of decision to fix the computer? And it sounds like both of you were saying, which is sort of hard to imagine, there was sort of a rogue element within VW that said, let's do this.
Yeah, I think it has – it touches too many different aspects of both engine development and the development of any given model for it to be concealed. I mean, it's hard to know. There's a few reports that are out that if a given Volkswagen or Audi or, you know, in that group model wasn't passing emissions tests, that a group of engineers would fly out from Wolfsburg, from the center, and they would do whatever they did until it met it. And so we now can imagine that some of that was perhaps some software tampering. So that implies, again, a sort of a centralized and intentional effort. But I don't know that we have verification of that report.
Let me get – looks like Dale from Landenberg to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Dale. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. Great show.
Thank you.
Here in the U.S., and I'm not happy about it, but U.S. real persons that do egregious harm are eligible for the death penalty. Corporations here in the U.S. anyway are free to buy politicians and claim the rights of citizenship. Why is the death penalty or charter revocation off the discussion?
Well, I mean, you're talking about VW cars killing people? Is that what you're saying, Dale?
No, but banks that were criminals back in the 1800s in Pennsylvania routinely had their charters revoked. They were bad citizens, quote-unquote, doing harm. So why is it unthinkable that we'd do a similar penalty for a corporation?
Well, let me put your question to Dan Becker, who's our lawyer here. And, I mean, Dan, what legal issues do you see that is raised by the scandal so far?
Well, first of all, we should end the death penalty for people. But as to the company, VW needs to be punished thoroughly in a way that makes it clear to other companies that they should not engage in similar conduct in the future. My guess is, and I would defer to John on this, my guess is that even an $18 billion fine and other costs from the lawsuits that will be brought privately would probably not put VW out of business, although it would certainly crimp their profits for a while. But VW shouldn't go out of business until they fix this problem, and it's their responsibility to fix it. There are now 500,000 vehicles in the U.S. and 11 million in the world that are polluting far too much, and they need to be cleaned up. As to the message that is sent by this, other companies need to be clear that they will be caught if they engage in this kind of misconduct or any kind of misconduct. And it's, you know, useful to think about it. If VW would put as much effort into making cleaner vehicles as they did into cheating, we'd all be breathing easier.
Well, interestingly, you both have said, John, you and Dan, is that this is – there's a bit of a pattern here. I mean, this may be the most egregious bit of fraud perpetrated, but nonetheless a pattern of trying to get around these emission standards.
Yes, and this may be the kind of thing that, shocks, outrages anyway, prompts enough both political and public response to have a set of tighter and tougher regulations. There's ambivalence certainly in this country about the level of regulation, and businesses push against it pretty hard.
Yeah.
But these issues are times, maybe tipping points, when a tougher set of regulations can be broadly supported.
Let me see what Bill from Brigantine has to say. Bill, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Does the use of biofuels reduce nitrogen oxide emissions as well as carbon dioxide emissions?
The use of biofuels. Can you take that, John?
Biodiesel.
No, I hear you.
I'd like to hear what Dan has to say, too. I believe so. I mean, I believe that the nitrous oxide problem is exclusive to diesel fuel and diesel technology, just the way that the entire thing works, whereas a biofuel can be, used in an adapted internal combustion engine, and it has fewer carbon consequences.
Dan, you want to weigh in on that?
Biofuels are a two-edged sword. On the one hand, John is right that there can be somewhat lowered emissions of some pollutants, but there can be higher aldehyde, formaldehyde, and other similar chemical emissions, which cause other problems. But also the process by which the biofuels are produced is very energy intensive. Neither biodiesel nor ethanol is an environmental boon. And depending upon how they're made, they can definitely be environmental busts.
Dan, about a minute before we have to end this hour, but do you think what's happened with these clean diesel engines is going to be a boost to electric cars, hybrid cars, battery-powered cars? Do you see them, in a sense, taking advantage of the problems, at least revealed so far at VW?
I hope that it does improve the acceptability of alternative ways of moving vehicles and electricity, which is only as clean as the source of the electricity. If you've got coal-fired power plants, the cars aren't as clean as they need to be. But electric vehicles are clearly the future of automotive propulsion. And hybrids are getting us partway there by introducing electricity as part of the way the vehicle is moved. But we need to look forward with both tougher standards and more consumer response to the advanced technology vehicles that are just being produced now. And they're being produced not because the auto companies wanted to make them, but because the government required them to do it. And ironically, even this 54.5 mile per gallon rule that is advancing hybrids and electric cars is being pushed back against by the automakers, which want to roll it back.
Well, to be continued. And my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Dan Becker, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. He directs the Safe Climate Campaign. John Paul McDuffie, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
My pleasure.
And he is a professor of management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, also director of the Program on Vehicle and Mobility Innovation at Wharton. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and learn much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the program, how to find us on Facebook, how to follow us on Twitter, and you can also sign up for our newsletter. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.